Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it in the air? Do you feel that extra push? It's for hockey, baby. It's a hockey push.
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Morning, Mullet. Yes, and the NHL season starts tonight. The Blackhawks back in action in Utah, of all places.
I'm having fun here at the hockey game.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Oh, how exciting.
We interrupt this Bears buzz to bring you hockey season.
Lots of fun hockey going on.
The Utah Club Coyotes playing against the Blackhawks tonight. Come on.
I got to know, in the next period, how you going to do that hockey?
Brandon, do you have a, you bet a lot of hockey. Do you have you made your hockey predictions?
There is a black hockey fan. He doesn't look cold at all.
I have the Blackhawks winning 32 games this season,
nice.
And I have Connor Bedard scoring 30 goals.
Connor Bedard goals. I'll go 40. I think he's capable of scoring 40 goals.
Bedard, I think 33, 30 games seems like enough to believe they can win.
A little overwhelmed with enthusiasm on opening night, but I don't think this is a playoff team.
Who do you think really made a difference in the first period?
Definitely the hockey players, Chrissy.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's do that hockey.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Well, maybe we do the hockey next time. Maybe Winnipeg is where the hockey is going.
Do over?
Yeah, I mean, it looked a lot worse than it was, but it didn't look good.
5-2 losers to the Utah Hockey Club. Good morning, Mully. It's a Wednesday, and if you stayed up late last night, it was not worth it, Hawks fans, because the Hawks begin the season with a loss.
They do.
And it was a listless loss.
Well.
Listless because it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hockey season.
I thought they were playing. I didn't think they were. There was an issue with them kind of snoozing on the court, listlessly wandering around instead of skating. I thought they did okay. It's
Delta Center convert. Yeah, that place was converted to a hockey rink. There were 5,000 fans that packed into there, and they could not see both goals. 5,000 seats that were obstructed.
I knew when I saw Gary Bettman at the fan event earlier in the day that Utah's not a hockey place, that Salt Lake City doesn't deserve a hockey team. They gave him polite applause.
They did.
They kind of cheered him.
They don't know the drill yet. They don't know that you boo the commissioner.
You boo Gary Bettman.
At every turn, especially Gary Bettman.
Every turn.
Every commissioner, but especially him.
He has to be booed.
So the Hawks don't get off to a good start. Nick Foligno, Toivo score goals. Bedard had two assists, so he's on the board. But it was disappointing, yes. And they go to Winnipeg on Friday night now.
Yeah.
Tough start.
Next game.
Tough start because 10 of the first 15 games are on the road for a team that is gelling slowly. A lot of new players.
I mean, are they different than they were a year ago?
Much.
There's better talent around Bedard. I understand all that.
Low bar.
You know, you just if you had to go to bed fairly early, you saw the score and you thought, oh, I've seen that game all preseason.
First period was not very impressive.
No, it was.
No, and I saw the first period and I was like, yeah. And then you wake up and you see what else happened and you're not terribly surprised. Glad they made it respectable. Utah Hockey Club, UHC, had the Yeti. I think they could still call it the Yeti eventually. They had a couple empty net goals.
Oh, empty netties?
The empty Yetis. And 5-2 it was, and off to a 0-1 start.
The MLB playoffs were excellent.
Oh, my.
If you like that sort of thing, if you like playoff baseball, very exciting. And now we've got a couple of elimination games today. Very exciting.
Very exciting, especially if you are, boy, a Padres fan or a Mets fan, they look like the hottest teams right now. But the big story, I think, is obviously the Dodgers with a $357 million payroll are on the brink of elimination in the first round.
And who knew that the Padres have a solver of the great riddle that is Shohei Ohtani? He's struck out now against the bullpen in three straight games.
He struck out against the bullpen. Mookie Betts is cold. And that lineup.
He had a homer yesterday.
But he that was his first hit in 23 at bats.
Well, he hit a homer the other day. It's
just, but it was taken away.
Yeah.
And the thing about last night's was it was almost the exact same play.
And he thought he got him
and
again.
And he thought that he got him again.
Yeah, it was funny.
And yes, Mookie Betts did homer in that inning. That was all the action in that second inning. And six runs the Padres scored were enough, barely, because Teoscar Hernandez hit the grand slam. But how about the way that Machado kind of was always in the middle of everything? He is kind of, he reminded me of like A.J. Pierzynski play. That was last night. He gets in the way of the throw from Freddie Freeman to second base, and then the floodgates opened because that error or that misplay led to everything else. And the Dodgers really, then they lost their head with a double play that wasn't. And the defense really got in the way, and in a one-run game, it mattered.
Well, I think what's interesting is Machado is really into this series, and you just get a hint of how good he really is. I wish he were engaged like that at all times, because he's totally engaged in this particular series. He's got he's got some dislike for his neighbor and his former team, and I think that it is apparent that he does not like them.
He threw the ball at Dave Roberts.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about that a little bit. Did he really? I mean, there's a net there, and there's I agree that, but you know, for a guy that has kind of pinpoint accuracy, he didn't really hit him.
He didn't really, the gesture was
Hey,
Dave rooted Roberts, in malice.
No question.
Okay, that's I guess the point is that regardless of how it looked, you know what his intent was. And so he doesn't like the Dodgers for whatever reason. He does seem more engaged.
And Dave Roberts did come out and talk about it. And then yesterday, from the minute he was introduced, he was booed lustily. You got to love the fans reacting to that.
And I love the fact that they're pointing out that, well, Dave Roberts, a former Padre, he's the Dodgers manager. Of course he's going to get booed, regardless of where he played or how long he played there. Dave Roberts is going to get booed in San Diego, especially with a crowd that was like an SEC football crowd. Mm. Oh, my gosh, waving those yellow towels. That was crazy. Petco Park goes nuts.
Yeah, it was like a terrible towel waving.
And then your guy, Tatis, oh, my gosh, is he hot. Red hot.
Yeah.
Four home runs in the postseason.
I would not have traded him back many, many years ago.
What is James Shields doing these days?
Yeah. What did he do those days? That wasn't much.
Batting practice?
Yeah. Oh, well.
Actually, the Padres, would you say they're fun to watch?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They are.
I think so.
They got a lot of talented players, and they got a lot of guys that are, you know.
Machado plays the villain role very well.
Yes.
Everybody's got to have one of those guys. And so I think Tatis leans into it very well. And they've got, they didn't have great pitching last night, but tonight, Dylan Cease can end the Dodgers season on short rest. I'm a little surprised. Are you a little surprised?
I am a little surprised. I'm a little surprised that they're going with a bullpen game, but I think it speaks to their pitching.
Well, I guess as surprised that Cease is coming back on short rest.
Well, I think they're trying to end the thing, and they want to get it over with as fast as possible.
Well, that was one of the performances last night that was really fun in baseball, but the Mets had the other one that was outstanding.
The earlier game was outstanding, and the Mets, you know, it's funny because, like, if you just knee-jerk response, what's going on, the miracle Mets, as we heard them referred to, they have the second highest payroll in baseball. The cool thing that is going on here is that somehow the Mets have become underdogs despite the fact that the owner has splashed huge money for that team.
Well, I think that's a fair comment, but I also think that it's in reference as much to where they came from in the standings.
No doubt. This is a team
that was left for dead. They weren't as bad or far down as the Tigers in the American League, but I don't think that a lot of people expected the Mets to be making the run that they went on, especially with the pitching that they didn't. This is a team that unloaded in the last couple of years, Verlander and they don't have DeGrom really. They had all these guys on the same staff, and now they're making a run with unlikely guys leading the way.
So today you have Philadelphia and the Dodgers facing elimination. Just think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. They are facing elimination games. How would that ruin everybody's NCAA tournament picks?
Well,
see what I'm saying?
Like, just if you went chalk.
Yes.
If you went chalk, you're dreading today. Because you're on the verge of losing your favorite teams or the teams that you chose and predicted would win.
But I don't feel like if that happens that baseball is suddenly not going to be interesting.
I don't either.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be even more interesting.
Yeah.
Look, the Mets-Padres NLCS, if it happens that way, is very compelling.
I agree.
Two hot teams that played their way into the tournament or played their way into this stage.
Yeah.
And the Mets get a inspired performance from Sean Manaea, who talked afterward, a local guy, Northwest Indiana.
Yes.
He pitched because he lost his aunt. He dedicated that outing to her. And the Mets are playing inspired baseball. Pete Alonso goes opposite field again. The guy who has, you know, all the pull power and prodigious power, he's going opposite field for his home runs now. So he's dangerous.
It's incredible. He hadn't done that all year, and then he did it, obviously, in Milwaukee, and there he goes again. And again, you know, you're a Cubs player. You would have been, should have, could have been Cubs player. I thought it was amazing. Like, in the post game, Manaea is asked about and he's like, you know, I lost my Aunt Mabel. It was just like so kind of heartwarming.
It was.
And
that's why I think people get into the story a little bit. There's a lot of emotion invested in and the unlikely nature of their Milwaukee victory, the way they came back. I think it's easy to get behind a story like this, even though you're right in pointing out they're the second highest payroll in baseball.
I mean, we are.
This is the best story money can buy.
It's well played.
But how about today?
It's very well played.
It's funny, Mully, because you're right about what could happen in the National League. And ironic. It's not ironic. I guess it's very interesting from a Chicago prism through that which we watch all sports.
Sure.
You've got Jose Quintana and Dylan Cease on the mound ready to clinch for the unlikely NLCS participants.
Mm-hmm.
He's Quintana for the Mets, Cease for the Padres. Good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I do think, however, if it ends up an all AL Central American League Championship, I'm not sure I'm on board for that.
I get it.
I just don't know that I can handle that. I don't blame you.
It would be difficult if the Royals beat the Yankees.
I don't know if that's good. I don't know that makes for a compelling baseball, especially if you get Detroit,
Kansas City in the ALCS.
I don't know that I can handle it.
And you got Cease going against Quintana in Game 7 of the NLCS. Look away.
Yeah.
Look away.
Look away,
Sox fans.
Yeah, I don't know. That's too much.
Skip Schumacher.
That might be.
Or Buck Showalter.
Yeah, they're not in a hurry to get that
No,
done,
they're not, are they?
Right? No.
What time is
Tito
it?
Tito was introduced.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's only October 9th.
He wasn't introduced here.
It's October 9th. Due diligence.
I hate to say.
Due diligence.
We'll get into it. I don't want to reveal.
Don't spoil.
I don't want to.
That's pick six. That's a tease.
I know.
That's a tease, listeners.
I didn't mean to attempt to start answering it by bad-mouthing how cheap they are. I won't do that.
Don't do that.
So I'll do that later, I should say. We don't want to start with that.
Got to stay on brand.
That's a tease for all you listeners out there. Dave. Stay tuned.
Thank you, Dave.
Dave's coming back today to say something else about DeAndre Swift.
Throw a little dirt on him. I got to tell you, I really enjoyed the Bulls last night. I mean, I couldn't believe that I watched it, that I stayed with it, that I spent as much time with it. But, oh, God. And they were down. Were they down 16?
15 at halftime or something.
Yeah, they were down.
They looked bad.
But I didn't think they looked bad.
No defense.
I mean, I was enjoying just the difference of it. And Josh Giddey played, which I was very pleased about, because I had been concerned that he had this injury and he blew out a leg. What happened? Like, I was momentarily taken aback.
No, hold on.
Yes.
Momentarily taken aback is understandable. We were both, I think everybody was, taken aback because of the way it was described. When you rupture a ligament in your ankle or in your foot,
well,
and you're a professional athlete, you have reason for alarm if you're a fan or a media observer, because it sounds terrible.
I really enjoyed the breakfast we had with Billy and with AK, and breakfast with Billy and the boss was a lot of fun for me. And I felt hopeful about them, and I enjoyed those guys in the conversation. Then I found out that the guy had ruptured a ligament at the Olympics, and we had talked to them about the Olympics. And I felt like, oh boy, you know, they've lost me now for good. Well, if it turns out that this guy, and then he played, and he's fine.
It was because, though, let's be honest here.
Yeah,
we were more disappointed that they didn't share it via us.
That's what
than we were about the health and welfare of Josh Giddey.
That is exactly what I'm saying, though. I was miffed.
We were like,
didn't share
we
that.
We thought we bonded over the Grateful Dead.
Exactly.
Come on, AK.
We had a nice cup of coffee.
Wait, come on.
And a nice chat. How could you not blurt out that the guy has ruptured?
We shared stories about the past,
but it turns out he's fine.
We bonded, and they told us nothing.
They didn't need to. Because it was
nothing to see here.
Move along.
Well, you know what? I was not as impressed with the Bulls until the second half.
Oh, they were.
I did not have the reaction. So, 90 seconds into the season, Billy Donovan calls timeout. So it took him a minute and a half to get ticked off.
No surprise.
No defense. No surprise. And so, my concerns about the Bulls after a good victory. You're right. Matis Bezelis is going to have to be heard from. Sooner rather than later.
I like the
kid. He already made an impression. But Mully, still, defense and three-point shooting, where are those coming from on this roster?
David, they won their first game.
I know.
If I were
as excited as you were, you would be telling me the same thing I'm telling you.
Listen, I know what the foibles and issues are. There's no mistaking what the problems are. I just thought they came out. I thought they were going to get blown out. And then they ended up. And I don't know why I stayed with it through halftime. I think because I was getting yelled at about being part of the patriarchy or something. I just lost focus because I was getting picked upon. You don't know what it's like having young women in your house telling you you're part of the patriarchy. I'm like, hey, I grew up on the South Side. The man has kept me down for years.
Wow. That was quite a game.
Yeah. But then I got to watch the game
and really kind of focus on it the second half.
Because I just
What did you like most? I know we'll get to the
about
pick
the
six.
Patriarchy? We're, no, I don't not think patriarchy. I'm any part
about
of the
Bulls,
patriarchy.
About the Bulls hierarchy.
What did I like most about it? They ran the floor. They did exactly what they claimed they were going to do. There was a moment where...
I'm still kind of eh.
Where... The young Australian lad comes down the floor and it just tried to score and two guys dunked it. I swear to God, there were two guys behind him dunking the same basketball. It was hilarious. It was just, they went up and down the floor. They ran up
33
and down the floor.
First, 33 fast break points. Now, for the first time out, that was the pace Billy Donovan was looking for. That's the identity they seek. They also are a team that you're going to get used to.
Josh Giddey can run the floor.
Josh Giddey is young, athletic, and I think he's going to be somebody that is going to have an impact.
He's going to do what they wanted Lonzo Ball to do. And Lonzo, obviously, they scratched him before the game. There was no surprise there, but he was sitting there.
But did you see that he had a COVID setback?
Yeah, he had.
That's too bad.
He wasn't sitting there. The reason he didn't play. Which, honestly, when I read that, I just thought, the word just went through my head, cursed. He's just cursed.
You feel bad for him.
I don't know how to.
When he gets back to the court, as we continue to say, if he steps onto the floor for a meaningful minute, if it's just even one, it's a victory for him and for everybody, for medical science. It's a victory.
He said he has a new knee. He says he's got a new knee.
It's remarkable how far he has come and what he has been through.
But when now, when you heard the COVID thing, didn't you just like,
yeah,
you know, I'm like, sorry.
Really?
I didn't mean,
poor
I mean,
guy.
You know, it's amazing. If it ain't one thing, it's another.
You know, they're going to play some times with Patrick Williams at the five.
Yes.
They're going to play small ball.
Yes.
He's going to be your five. He's going to guard the other team. That is the definition of positionless basketball in the NBA this day and age. When you have your five, your center, traditionally, as a guy that also could play small forward for you.
Look at Bezelis. He came down at one point.
He's really interesting.
And he did a turnaround jumper, and Stacey King started laughing. It was just like, wow, like, where did that come from?
Yeah, I think
that was right out of Mike's playbook.
And you know what you like about it as much as anything? That the kid didn't feel fazed by it. He just has that confidence.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of a swagger on the court. I like the attitude. We'll see how he fits, but it's fun.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you to return the Cooper Flagg jersey. But it did look like they were better than I thought.
I didn't buy one yet. I have it on hold. I have it on hold.
You feel like Danny used to, didn't he have the wrong number on his jersey?
Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
How about Robert Saleh and the fallout with the Jets? That broke on our show yesterday before we got out of here.
Super weird.
And thank you for letting me leave a little bit early. I had a good opportunity to speak or moderate a panel at the Chicago Sports Summit. It was on analytics of all things in pro sports. I know you'll get a chuckle out of that, but that's why I left for the final segment. But before that happened, Robert Saleh gets fired.
Yeah.
And then the fallout. And then the Aaron Rodgers stuff begins. Wow. Do you blame him?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at the pick six questions, but yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right, we'll get into that too, because I think it's easy to make him the scapegoat, but what are you doing 5 games into a season? You're 2-3. You're not 0-5. You fire your coach? You're the owner?
I don't want to reveal anything, but I believe one of our questions is if he's a coach killer.
Well, he has been referred to as worse.
I don't know if that answers.
We're supposed
to
hear from him today. I think he's supposed to address the media about this today. We didn't hear from him yesterday.
Oh, why not?
But all kinds of stuff going on.
Apparently,
in the NFL.
And we'll see what happens. But Nathaniel Hackett was going to be demoted. He wasn't going to be fired. Here's what I think's weird, David. I think that they lost a game in London. They came home. There's a whole Monday available to you if you need to fire somebody. There's a whole flight available to you. They wait until Tuesday, and then the coach comes in. He's beginning his day. He's like, okay, he was not going to fire Nathaniel Hackett, but he was planning on demoting him. And then he gets called to Woody's office, and oh, you're fired. That is a little bit much.
That is a little impulsive.
A little bit.
And that is an owner that can do whatever he wants, certainly, but it's meddling to a degree you just don't want. And it's on brand for the Jets because it's just awful.
Yeah. And was it him that did it? That's still one of the questions.
Worth exploring.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Bears are in London having a jolly old time.
I mean, again, like
today.
They said that's the third coach since 2014 or something that's been fired after a game in London. Just be careful. Take
be
care
careful,
of business.
Doug Peterson. Oh, you were talking about Doug Peterson.
Yeah. Don't, whatever you do, don't go into the owner's suite. If you get a phone call.
It is odd that the London experience has created that kind of reaction.
Isn't that bizarre? I mean,
do you have longer to think about things on the trip home?
I guess the flight home, you stew. Mm. Look at him. I don't like the cut of his jib. I don't know. I don't know why that would be, but it's a weird reality that's out there.
It is.
Nothing to worry about here.
We're going
to
hear later today from Kevin Warren, too, as well, right? The Bears president speaks in London.
Speaking of firing people?
Well, you brought it up, Bears hierarchy.
No, I didn't mention the Bears. I was talking about Doug Peterson.
The Bears are in London.
Aren't there rumors about him getting fired?
Yes, there are.
Who else would be fired?
Nobody.
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 Bears have never done that in season.
They never have. The Jets haven't done that in season since Lou Holtz. Did you see that? I think Lou Holtz was the last time they dealt with an in-season coaching change.
Boy, that's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
All right, we got to get to the pick six. Got a lot of fun questions. Going to have a lot of fun with it. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did you at any point consider Matt Eberflus and his situation as you watched the Jets fire coach Robert Saleh? How about Eberflus, also a defensive guy, having a worse record than Saleh at 13-26? Is this story more about Aaron Rodgers better be a coach killer than Saleh being a bad head football coach?
Aaron Rodgers better as a coach killer than his coaches as a football coach. Aaron Rodgers is part of the problem here. There's no shadow of a doubt. Don't try to hug him. Look, I did think about Matt Eberflus strictly as a defensive guy who really needs his quarterback to play well, who cannot impact how well his quarterback plays. It's just a very difficult thing to do when you're not the offensive play caller. And it went through my head that, yeah, you know, what is Flusie's record? It's not very good. And if anything happened to his quarterback, I mean, we're sitting here, and I think we picked them to go 9-8, if I'm not mistaken, David, and I.
Yes, we both did.
We both kind of agreed on that.
Yep.
That's one game over 500, folks. That is not having, like, the greatest season. And again, it's a young team. It is a young quarterback. He's going to get better. We're watching him get better, and I feel like the Bears are headed in the right direction. But it is a hand-to-hand combat situation. You're in the NFL. It is hard to win, and they had a team that wasn't trying to win, and that's on his record. I don't think Flusie's running into that problem. I think he's out of the woods after a couple wins. But as he will tell you, it is week to week in the league, and it's hard to win. And when you don't win, they lose a game in London this week. We're going to be right back kind of talking about what the hell's gone wrong, why aren't they winning. They need to keep winning, and then everything will take care of itself. I don't think Matt Eberflus, though, at the end of this year, is still going to have a losing record. And in the next couple of years, if he wants to keep his job long term, and I believe he has that possibility, but you got to win, and you got to win this year, just have a winning record, and then start making runs toward the playoffs, then start being a good team. And I think it's a harder thing to do than you imagine. And I think that, you know, the idea that Robert Saleh, who is a really good defensive coordinator in San Francisco, the idea he gets called in and he's told basically, you know, you didn't do enough with Zach Wilson. That's basically what this is, isn't it? I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers and what's happening right now. But the reason he has a losing record is because of the quarterback he had.
I did not think about it, but I started to think about it after seeing this question submitted last night, and I think depending on how this year goes, you could fast forward 300 days or so, and this could be what's happening to Matt. I don't mind owners doing this at all. I mean, they have a very small window, if there is even a window anymore with Aaron Rodgers. Something has to be done. I also heard the owner yesterday say, this is the most talented Jets roster since I've been the owner of the Jets. And we had to do something. Again, meaning that it's now or never. The Patriots are down. The Dolphins don't have their quarterback. It's you and the Bills in the AFC East. So it's now or never. I mean, I'm just surprised, though. This is what bothered me the most about the situation. It reminds me of Major League Baseball when you fire the manager and you elevate the manager's bench coach to be the new skipper of the team. You know, what the defensive coordinator that's not even calling the plays is now the head coach. So he's the rah-rah guy, you know. And then there's also, he did not in his opening press conference commit to Nathaniel Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett might have his play calling duties stripped. One of the reports out of the New York papers was, as soon as the rumor was that Nathaniel Hackett was being stripped of his play calling duties, 5 minutes later, Woody Johnson and his brother went to, they went to Robert Saleh's office and confronted him, and he had to be escorted out by team security. Escorted out of the building. Get out. Never come back. See you, bye.
This is dysfunctional, it is impulsive, and it is on brand for the New York Jets. It's way too early to panic when you look at five games into a season with a 40-year-old quarterback. If you're going to do this and get rid of Robert Saleh and he wasn't the guy, you should have done it in the offseason. This isn't Major League Baseball, Dustin. This isn't a type of thing with a 162-game season where you can get a bounce and you have a new manager and a new culture and a new change. This is the NFL where it's much more difficult to pull that off. That's why there aren't in-season coaching changes. That's why it's been since 1976 since the Jets have made an in-season coaching change. That's when they said goodbye to Lou Holtz with one game remaining back in 1976. This is the only third time in their history they've done this. I do think also, while it's tempting to look at the Matt Eberflus comp because he's a defensive-minded head coach, I do think it's apples and oranges only because of this. We saw Matt Eberflus, I think, probably got involved after the Colts loss.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Waldron has called a different football game the last 2 weeks. I don't think it's an accident that it's been more in line with what the defensive-minded head coach might like, because this is a style of play that he favors. This is the identity they want. They want to play a little bit more of a run-oriented offense with a defense that can get you takeaways and sacks and field position. So Matt Eberflus intervened in the way that maybe Robert Saleh wasn't allowed to. If that makes Aaron Rodgers a coach killer, I think that fits. Would anybody be surprised if Aaron Rodgers added coach killer to the list of things that we have called him over the last several years? So I don't see the comp with the Bears necessarily. It could be in a year from now. Let's hope not, because I don't want Caleb Williams to develop into that kind of a diva that is getting coaches fired. But I think the Jets situation to me is an isolated one. It's a product of the New York environment. It's a product of the dysfunction of Woody Johnson and how impulsive he has become.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
That's one of those questions. You know how hard that is to answer.
Can't wait to hear from that guy Saturday after his team goes out to Oregon. See how that goes for Mr. Day.
Oh.
The Bears have had 48 offensive line combinations in Matt Eberflus's 39 games. This was from Mark Potash. How do you suspect the O-line will look to start Sunday's game? And how tempting will it be for the Bears to use the bye week following this game as the reason to buy another week of rest and recovery for banged up guys like Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum?
I really would look at that as an opportunity, because you want to have some stability that you don't currently have. Tevin Jenkins, his biggest problem, it bears repeating because it is continues to be the story. He can't get a long-term contract because he can't stay on the field. And if you bring him back too soon, even though he may think that he is ready, I think an extra week might benefit him, because one becomes two. You have the schedule is in your favor. Bill Murray has been acceptable. He graded out well, according to PFF, if you trust that. I don't know, but on tape, he didn't get exposed. And so if you have options with Matt Pryor, who's become more valuable than you ever imagined he would have to be, but he is your right guard. Maybe Bill Murray is your left guard. You've got some depth behind them in Nate Davis. Remember him. And I don't know where Borum fits in, what kind of shape he would be in. Tevin Jenkins might benefit from another week. Even if he feels like he's ready to go, maybe he will try to go. but you don't have to make him go because you can rest him and get him ready to go when you come back after the bye. So I would think that it would be Braxton Jones, Bill Murray, Coleman Shelton, Matt Pryor, and then obviously Darnell Wright.
Well, if Bill Murray is starting this game, the Bears are going to lose. I'm just saying.
Wow.
You got to get Tevin Jenkins out there.
Wow.
This is a game this is one of the games that you should have marked, that you need to win as an organization. You want that win going into the bye week. Get your rest on the bye. If he gets hurt in the game, then bring in Bill Murray, I guess. Okay? But not now. And I need a little clarity. So 48 offensive line combination. So this is anytime like a guy like goes in and out of a game because of an injury, I'm guessing, is part of this number.
I'm sure Potsy has done the research.
I'm just saying that just seems like a crazy. I mean,
it's crazy.
48 out of 39. It's wild. That's absolutely wild. I mean, maybe I'm selling Bill Murray short. Maybe I am. But you know who the second ranked offensive guard for the Bears was after Bill Murray in PFF? Tevin Jenkins. Okay, so I'm just saying, if you want to trust the numbers, the Bears need to win this game. Tevin Jenkins needs to be there for Tevin Jenkins and for the Bears on Sunday morning.
I don't argue with the idea that Jenkins needs to play to prove he can play and that he can stay upright, etc. But I think you're underselling Bill Murray and what he managed to do. Bill Murray came into the league as a defensive player, and they moved him to offense after he spent 2 years in the league. I thought you would love a guy like this, his story, Dustin. And if you watched him at all after the game and went back and looked at, he played offensive line like a defensive player. He maintained a lot of that aggressiveness. He was trying to put a hat on someone. He was trying to win a physical battle. He was their top ranked player in run blocking, according to PFF, and he was second in pass blocking. So that's pretty good for a guy who's forced into action. It means he's been waiting and he wants to play and he's playing aggressively. I have no problem if Bill Murray has to start the game. I thought he did very well for himself in the limited time I saw. And I recall Flusie bringing him up in the preseason. He brought him up out of nowhere during one practice. Hey, Bill Murray's doing a real good job.
He had a good camp.
So I think that's, give me guys that really want to play and want to be out there and want to have an aggressive attitude about doing that. I think that I just don't know. I don't know how you're lining up all your backups if all your backups are playing, right? I don't know what you have to do. At what point would you actually have to play Nate Davis, I guess, is the question, because he's still healthy. So you would think at some level you might actually need him. To me, it's real simple. If a guy can play, you let him play. If you deem that Ryan Bates is healthy and ready to come back, you bring him back. And I don't believe in this idea of, you get 3 weeks off if you don't play him this week. I don't believe that at all. I think that, players play. And the goal is to get guys back on the field as fast as they can. And if a guy is going to take a flight to London, he may as well line up if he's able to do so. So I wouldn't worry about whether, he's got a rib and an ankle. We'd be wiser to not have him leave with a knee. I would put the guy out there and let him play. And if he can't play, I'd put someone else out there.
That question remains.
What was your biggest takeaway from the Blackhawks season opener in Utah? Do you believe the team around Connor Bedard is significantly better this season? Did the NHL approve expansion to Utah in part because it's one of the rare places where fans don't know how to respond to Commissioner Gary Bettman, who was politely cheered as part of a pregame fan event?
One of my favorite ever moments at a Super Bowl is when we went to that hockey game in New York, David. We had about 19 guys from Chicago, and we were just talking about Gary Bettman and how I was telling a story about how I was at a Blackhawks game, and they tried to like introduce the assistant equipment manager and Gary Bettman, and then they introduced another guy, and all of a sudden the people like kind of, hey, wait, is that Bettman? Boo! And the whole crowd started booing, and so we were all laughing, and then Gary shows up in our booth.
He was very nice that night.
He was lovely.
Yeah.
And we were like, hey, get a photo with the Chicago guys. So we all got around him, and Bob Vassilopoulos is going to take the photo. And he was taking his, like, he just couldn't, he had a little issue with his camera. And Bettman's like, Bettman said, come on, boo, boo. He started booing Bob, taking too long with the photo. And all of us, the photo was one of the great photos because we're all laughing our rear ends off. Everyone was having a big laugh.
It was a good time.
It was a great night, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a great moment. And so whenever I see Gary, I think of that moment. And I think he's in on the joke. He knows everyone boos him no matter what he says, where he goes. So it was weird to just see him received well in Utah. As far as the team being better, I believe that. I don't know if that's going to be reflected in the record. I think it's going to take them some time to get up and running. And it seems as if, and we'll talk to Chelly later, but it seems like their defense isn't really up to snuff yet.
I hate that the Blackhawks are part of the Western Conference. I hate that the first game of the season had a 9 p.m. puck drop. I hate that the first game of the season was on the four-letter network and not available, because I do have, you know, I'm all excited. I do have the new Chicago Sports Channel. I was able to watch the Bulls last night. Got a lot of people texting, complaining, Xfinity users complaining about the fact that they couldn't watch the game. Well, you could listen to the game right here on The Score. You know, is the team a better around Bedard? I think so, but it's better offensively. Are they going to be able to outscore teams? I'll be interested to hear our guy here, Brandon Fryer, tell us whether or not we should be betting the over. I think a good parlay when the Blackhawks and Bulls play is to bet the over on both of their games. That would be like a fun little trend to follow. When they both play on the same night, we should like maybe do like a show bet. Just invest like a $2 two-team parlay on both overs, because I don't think either team knows how to play defense.
Well, I think you saw that reflected in the way Luke Richardson was mixing and matching defensive pairings last night in the first game. It reflected also just the trial and error. There's going to be a lot of different combinations, a lot of new talent, a lot of new players. The Hawks are deeper and more experienced than they were a year ago. But the thing about hockey, like any sport, but I think especially hockey, you got four lines, you got all sorts of different combinations, all different kind of chemistry that you try to achieve. It's hard to compress that into a training camp, especially early in the season, and you're trying to get the best out of Connor Bedard, and he certainly gets the best out of everybody who plays around him. He had 2 assists last night. They only scored 2 goals. So everything is about 98. But you have to give us a little bit more time, and I think that's the problem. The other issue is that they play 10 of the first 15 games on the road. So for a team trying to figure out how everyone fits together, both on the defensive pairings and on the, you know, the first 3 or 4 lines, then that's going to be difficult. So not making excuses, but I think that, yes, you can say they're definitely more talented. They're definitely going to be better in theory on paper, but trying to get this all to come together like hockey teams, good hockey teams do, it may take a while before you start to see some real results and a benefit from all the experience you paid for and got. If you're Kyle Davidson, you're getting a little impatient because the preseason was awful. Awful. excuse me. But you want more results.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
What did you make of the Bulls preseason opener? Did you shrug at the word that Lonzo Ball wasn't going to play in this one? Any thoughts on this team?
Yeah, I wasn't as excited as you were, Mully. I think that a couple things that were easy positives. Bezelis, yes. The way that they came back, definitely. Io liked a lot.
Mm.
I didn't like the way that they played defense, and I didn't like the way they shot from three-point range. And those are the two big things that you're going to look for in preseason for cues. And defensively and three-point range, they still look like they're not where they need to be, and I have a hard time envisioning them getting better necessarily because they still don't have that kind of roster. But there were some bright spots. I liked the way they came back. You know, I liked Josh Giddey. I have to say that. Josh Giddey was impressive as well. So there were some good things. First preseason game, a lot of mistakes, kind of sloppy. But overall, yeah, I think you have to be happy with the victory, the way they came back, but I'm really excited about how Bezelis fits into the rotation.
Yeah, a win's a win, and Coby White looked like he was in nice form, and he's going to have to continue to grow if the Bulls are going to win 30 to 40 games like most of us are thinking. Bezelis looked good. I mean, yeah, guy's a bundle of energy, right? You'd love to have some of that, the energy that that kid had on the court, so I like that. There was effort. Giddy, it was great that he played. And I was disappointed. I'll raise my hand. I was disappointed to not see Ball out there. I mean, what are we waiting for? What are we doing?
Lonzo Ball?
Right. He's practicing. Put him out, even if it's five minutes. Have him break a sweat.
He's got COVID. He had a setback. Tested positive for COVID.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess then maybe you should put him on IR and we should just maybe we'll see him in 2025. Maybe we'll see him in 2025. Get COVID.
Get the whole team sick.
His conditioning is affected. I can tell you, when you get COVID, everybody can relate to that. You're knocked back. If you're a casual jogger or an NBA player, you're knocked back. Your conditioning is affected.
You just coughed. Do you have COVID, David?
Wow. I coughed. I got choked up talking about the Hawks.
You need to be excused?
Oh, man.
Okay, let's just hear from him in 2025. He got COVID.
What is going on in the world? Look, here's the reality. The reality is that, you know, DeMar DeRozan is gone. Alex Caruso is gone. It's a different Bulls team. I think we knew that going in. Let's be careful now about saying that I didn't notice they can't hit a three-pointer and they're not a great defensive team. I saw them do what they said they were going to do, which is run the floor. Giddy was running the floor. There were guys following it to the rim. I liked that. I liked seeing Matas Bezelis. He played well.
You're Giddy.
And it was fun to see.
Giddy.
I enjoyed that game because it was different. The Bulls are different, and they look different. And they came back in the game, and they won. I am not predicting great things for the Bulls. And I never claimed they were going to make I understand what the realities of this season are. I said that for a night, I really enjoyed watching them run up and down the floor. That's all I said. Let's calm down about how much
I'm calm. I'm very calm. I'm
enthusiastic about the
I'm
Bulls.
Very calm.
I mean, Dustin. I'm not Dustin. At least I'm paying attention.
Did he had COVID? That was the reason?
That's why he didn't play.
Okay, we'll see if he plays Saturday night, or what's the protocol now? What's the government say? What's the rules now about COVID?
I'm not quite sure.
I think you try to.
Well, some people had it memorized.
You try
David.
To steer clear.
So
of people
I want to know what it, I want to know
if
what
he
it
plays
is.
Saturday night with a mask. We'll know.
Mask
that's,
on his
that's
knee.
That's a great question.
All right, what's your takeaway from Game 3 results in the National League Divisional Series? Do you consider the Mets an underdog, given that they have the second highest payroll in the sport at just over $342 million? The Dodgers, the only team higher, $357 million. Why do the Padres dislike them so much?
It's like a Big Brother thing, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of, I'm sure the Padres and the Dodgers are too close to each other to like each other. I'm sure the attention that the Dodgers have gotten this year is rubbed the Padres the wrong way. I like the Padres, the fact that they're going for it. Of course, there is the idea that that they didn't want Manny Machado and they traded him and all that. So, yeah, there's reasons not to like a team. But I think it's amusing to me that the Mets are considered this great underdog story. And I understand that they did come from nowhere and they did figure out a way. They had an unbelievable ending to the season. They had all the travel. They had to go to Atlanta. They won a game and it was miraculous the way that they won to get in to begin with. And they split a doubleheader and they got into the playoffs and they went to Milwaukee and they eliminated Milwaukee. And I understand everything that happened, but it is amusing to me that we are they have somehow become these miracle Mets, these darlings, but because they are a very, the payroll is ridiculous, and they've got like a lot of really well played players that are performing pretty well right now. So that's good to see, and I've always been a big a Frankie Lindor fan. I think he's a great player. So I'm enjoying that. I love the idea that when now we have a couple of elimination games, because all it means is that if the teams in danger of being eliminated win, then everybody's going to be eliminated. And I love that kind of thing.
I'm hoping both these series end up to game fives is what I'm hoping. The fan in me, that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see the do or die aspect of this. I don't want to see David and I's World Series pick eliminated later today. I don't want the Phillies to be gone.
I kind of do. I'm okay with that. I know I picked them, but I like these stories. I say go Mets, go Padres. I want the NLCS to be a matchup between two teams that played their way into that spot. I'm sick of the Dodgers. I know Ohtani is a hard guy to say anything bad. I'm not. This has nothing to do with Ohtani, but I'm sick of the Dodgers being there. Sick of them spending all the money. Phillies, yeah, Schwarber, every time you see Schwarber, you're like, why isn't he in Chicago? So I'm good with the Phillies going home. Even though I picked them to win, I would like to see the Mets, who are remarkable. I know I'll stop saying miracle Mets, but they are remarkable based on where they came from in the standings as much as their payroll, because it is a remarkable story. So it's easy to dislike the Dodgers. It's easy to get behind the Padres. They have Dylan Cease on the mound today. It would be a great moment. I'd be happy for a guy that deserves that kind of success. Yes, he is an ex-White Sox pitcher, but not his fault. They had to unload him, and they got bad enough they needed to bottom out. Dylan Cease winning today to clinch the series and eliminate the Dodgers. Fantastic, fantastic moment in a season that started when he was still way back in the Camelback Ranch getting traded to the Padres.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. 7:25. 7:25 is Biggs time this morning. The Reds wasted no time in replacing their skipper, David Bell, by introducing Terry Francona on Monday. Why are the White Sox being so deliberate? Has your short list changed, and does it really matter?
Well, I don't think it matters necessarily, because the thing about the White Sox is about talent, not the manager. The manager will have to establish a culture. It's a tough job, and I don't think that it's going to be an easy job. My short list is Skip Schumacher, David Bell, and David Ross. If I were interviewing candidates, that would be my first three candidates. Somebody who has done the job before. I know that there's going to be a candidate emerge who doesn't have any major league managing experience, who will come highly regarded with a great reputation from a winning organization, and we'll all sit and wait and see how he manages the clubhouse and manages his lineups and all those things. But I know in Schumacher, David Bell, and David Ross, guys who have done it before and had success, that's where I think you start.
It's a good list, David. I like your list. I would add, and I did this a while back, I would add Willie Harris as a guy that they should definitely talk to. I mean, he played for the team. It's also kind of juices up things a little bit. There'd be a little bit of a buzz with the Cubs and White Sox fans. But, I mean, no. Until the roster gets better, does it matter? Yeah, I think it could. I think you could have a leader. That's why I think... What about the is it the Birmingham Barons that won the Southern League?
Yeah.
What about
Sergio Santos?
What about him? I know that's cheap, but I mean that he knows these guys, and he also we joke around about it. We've talked like who would want that job. John Heyman's come on. He didn't said who would want that job, but he said it's going to be a tough sell. Here's a guy that wants the job. He wants the job. Says it would be an honor to be the skipper of the White Sox. That's got to mean something to somebody, I would think.
My suspicion is that the reason that the Reds went after Tito and hired him is because they are hoping to win, and they want to win immediately. And I think with the White Sox, they are being deliberate because maybe they're playing a game of musical chairs. Maybe they're waiting for whoever is going to get paid to take whatever job is available to them, and then they can pick up whoever the best manager is that will come cheap. And I think that that's kind of one of their priorities, is to not spend a lot of money, whether it's on free agents or on managers or whatever it might be. I think if Buck Showalter showed any interest in wanting to be the manager of the White Sox, the guy, it's like he's been a manager of the year repeatedly. Why wouldn't you bring the guy in and talk to him? Why wouldn't you want to know what his ideas are? Why wouldn't you go outside your limited small time frame and expand it and let people tell you what's wrong with your team and maybe take some notes and use that information that they have determined from watching as a methodology of hiring the right guy for the job? Well, what do you think about this? Have you noticed this? That sort of thing. I worry that it's amateur hour on the South Side and that you got people that really don't have a great depth of knowledge about what they're doing, or their knowledge is from, you know, decades ago, and things have changed quite a bit. So I would have no problem. I would like to hear that they're interviewing people, and I would like to know that they have expanded outside the organization and that they are trying to learn something from the people that they're talking to about their job. But I got to imagine that there are a lot of people that don't want this job, that would prefer other jobs. And so maybe you have to wait and see who's the best candidate that lands in your wheelhouse.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right, that is the pick six. The extra point is next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
The Packers, the Vikings, the Bears are 1-2-3 in the NFL. In takeaways, what's happened to the NFC North? Are the Bears partially responsible for creating a defensive first mentality in the division post Aaron Rodgers? How do the Lions, the best overall team in the North, fit into that equation?
I don't know if it's a statistical anomaly or what, but it is something that gets your attention. The Packers are coming after people. They got a safety in McKinney that they, in the offseason, they made an impact. He's got five straight interceptions. You look at the way that the Vikings have attacked people with Brian Flores. And then the Bears are thriving on defense. 11 straight games with 21 or fewer points. It's a defense first division. How did that happen? And then you look at the top of the division, you think, well, maybe we're overreacting because Ben Johnson is still the hottest assistant in the NFL. He still has a quarterback that's coming off a perfect game. They have a duo at running backs that make them a dynamic offense. But Dan Campbell gives them a toughness that I think you want to embody in your football team. It's just something to keep an eye on. When we talk about the NFC North as the toughest division in football, and you start to wonder why, well, I think all of these teams are emphasizing defense. I think all of these teams are emphasizing toughness. So when you talk about the identity of the Bears team, which is a constant source of conversation in Chicago, it's not any surprise. It's traditionally defense and toughness. That's how you win in this division.
Well, if the Bears hope to win in this division, which right now shapes up to be, at least on the NFC side for sure, the toughest division in the NFC, no doubt about it, they are going to have to take the ball away from the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions if they hope to win those games.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. I don't know that there's been necessarily a defensive mentality that's crept into the conference. Obviously, you know, you mentioned Ben Johnson. He's still going to be like a top guy getting a head coaching job a year from now. Maybe he winds up as the Jets coach. He will definitely be on their list. I think that it's interesting to me that, you know, Jeff Hafley is a guy that was in San Francisco when he's now the Packers defensive coordinator. He's friends with the Flower, so they've had a longstanding relationship, and he brings him in as a first-year defensive coordinator, and he's changing some things a little bit. I think Brian Flores is just an excellent defensive signal caller, a very aggressive guy. I think he does a really good job in that role. And, you know, I think that it's interesting to me. I think the Packers are still a team that's driven by offense and what they can get done. I think that Matt LaFleur has done an excellent job of winning games while his quarterback is still kind of getting back and getting up and running. So it's a really good division. There are good players in the division, and they have tried to address everybody in the division is you know, a pretty good team. They're the only team in the entire league that has has a winning record, and they do very well, as you say, with their defense. But to me, I think the Vikings are offensive driven. They got an offensive minded coach. I think the Packers are offensive driven, and I think the Lions are more offensive driven. The fact that they haven't ignored defense is excellent, but I think a lot of if you look at the Vikings' success, some of that is due to the fact that they have been able to score points, and they've been able to put people in a position where they're playing from behind, them in particular. But yeah, these are good teams, man. This is a golden age in the North Division. Hard to take it.
Hard to take the North, no doubt about it. The Vikings beat the Jets, though. Not because of their offense. I mean, Sam Darnold wasn't good.
Oh yeah, I know, but that's one game. I mean that yeah. you know, they beat the Jets because the Jets quarterback was god awful. I mean, he was awful. Did you see some of those picks he threw?
They should fire the coach.
They definitely got to get rid of that coach. All right, we've got your calls 312-644-6767. Mullion on the score.
Money.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We've got our guy Joe Ostrowski joining us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Joe, of course, with BetQL. Joseph, good morning. How are you, sir?
Oh, good morning, fellas. So much to go over. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the baseball, just because It's fun to see it go on. I wish some of our local teams were involved, but it's great time of year where everything's happening, including some wild elimination games today in the playoffs.
Yeah, goes by so quickly. And just taking a look this morning with the updated odds, because with every result, you see things swing so much. And for the first time all season, the Padres are now favored to win the World Series, which is pretty amazing, which makes sense, I guess, because, you know, you're going against the Dodgers, a team that's been favored throughout, along with the Yankees up there. And now they're just one win away. So at the very top, it's the Padres as your favorite, Yankees second, Mets third, and then the Dodgers and Phillies after that. It's so interesting. You know, every year we get surprised by it, guys. But last year, the 1 and 2 seeds were out as soon as they played, with the Braves being involved last season. So, you know, as far as today, it's going to be so exciting with four games all day going on. And one that certainly stands out to me, those first three games, they're all basically pick-ems. You're not laying any kind of a juice. So the Royals with Lugo going, I love that pitching advantage that they're going to have. That would be something if they're able to take a lead in that series. That certainly stands out. And, of course, all the former Sox pitchers going today as well.
But very interesting.
The Padres have been the hot team. Most bettors, they've been jumping on them ever since the trade deadline when they boosted that bullpen. And you look at the way that they're playing now and you see it.
Joe, the Bears are in London. They have the Jaguars on Sunday. The Jaguars are bad. The Panthers were worse. But what do you think it looks like in terms of betting options on Sunday?
Well, Doug Peterson was the favorite to be the first coach fired. So now he's the favorite to be the next coach fired. So still a lot of pressure for Jacksonville, even though they did win that game. Guys, they're backing the Bears, and they're backing the over. And I'm a little surprised because with the experience that Jacksonville has with this trip, I thought going into the year that it'd be more some Jacksonville money, but people are looking at the way that the Bears are playing, and they're also betting the over. They see this offense taking making strides, and you have that mismatch going against the Jacksonville defense. So Bears are a 2.5-point favorite. This total has jumped up a couple of points, 44.5, in international games. And we saw it in the Minnesota game again over the weekend. The favorite has done very, very well. They are 35-10-1 straight up. And you know, that makes sense. They should have a good record straight up. But against the spread, the great equalizer, the favorite is 31-15 against the spread in these international games. So Caleb Williams has an opportunity to start 4-0 straight up and against the spread as a favorite, which would be unreal. But before Caleb, there were 33 quarterbacks that were taken number one since the merger, and only one in cover the first three games before Caleb. That was Eli Manning. So this is what's happening here with Caleb. He's getting a lot of respect. So the Jaguars, for those that the experience thinking about that, they're 6-5 straight up and against the spread. So that could be a big advantage next week. Maybe not as much this week.
So, Joe, we saw the Blackhawks open their season and they lost, and we saw the Bulls open their preseason and they won. What? How will these two teams do? Do you have any over-unders?
Yeah, let me check on that. As far as the Bulls go and the win totals and making the playoffs, the win total, it's not going to be too exciting. It's down there. We're talking upper 20s, wow. 27.5, 28.5. That is fourth or fifth from the bottom. So they're thinking it would be a real long shot as far as the Bulls go. And just taking a look as far as the Hawks go, it's, you know, interesting at the very top. It is so bunched up. There isn't too much separation after you move past Edmonton. But the Blackhawks are 220-1 to win the cup.
Oh,
they're
boy.
Also like fifth from the bottom. So, yeah, the betting market is saying that it won't be too exciting. With the winter teams, all our hopes are on the Bears here.
Ohio State or Oregon?
I think Ohio State's the best team in the country. I'm going to take them. They're 3.5. What a weekend that we have. Like last weekend, you go into it, you think, okay, a lot of these games weren't all that exciting, but I would take Ohio State. Man, South Carolina, what a bad spot. You got to go against Alabama now. You got Ole Miss last week, and they didn't get into the end zone. And now you've got to face Alabama coming off that embarrassing wire-to-wire Vandy loss. One other quick thing, Illinois, man, they're going against Purdue. The word is that Purdue team may have quit. And you look at the losses and how much they are getting trounced by. Like, yeah, I think Illinois, 19.5, they could certainly cover that number.
Wow, that's a lot of points. Great stuff, Joe. Great catching up with you. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Joe Ostrowski. That's unbelievable, huh? Lot of points. You know, here's the thing. We have good games this weekend. It's going to be fun to watch. Those games last weekend weren't supposed to be very good, but there were a ton of upsets.
You never know. Every weekend can deliver.
Yeah, you never know. All right. It's Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767. We're going to get to your calls on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.